Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome. You're listening to The Leadership Focus, an internet radio show geared to everyday leadership, both at work and throughout your life. Each week, we present you with new ideas, interesting guests, and actionable strategies to help you be an incredible leader with a more balanced life. I'm your host, Lisa Pospyork, Executive Coach and CEO of Focus Coaching, a leadership coaching and training firm based in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Tonight, our topic is competing in the global marketplace, critical information for international success. And our guest tonight is Jack S. Katz. Jack is the author of Competing for Global Dominance, a highly acclaimed book which distills his decades of experience and cutting-edge knowledge in international business gained from executive positions at companies such as Cisco Systems, Sun Microsystems, and Providian Financial Services in an accessible and readable format. Jack is also CEO of Novus Globe, LLC, an international business and market consultancy and research company. Identified as one of the top 10 people to know by Technology Decisions magazines, Jack is noted for knowledge and delivery of technology and business solutions that have a dramatic effect on the bottom line of global companies. He is in frequent demand as a keynote speaker for professional and technology organizations and has delivered talks on three continents. We are in for an interesting evening tonight. So welcome, Jack.
Lisa, it's a pleasure to be here, and I want to thank you for inviting me on your program, and I look forward to our conversation today. And hopefully what I'm saying will be a benefit to your listening audience.
Well, it's great to have you here.
And thank you.
As you know, my listening audience is full of entrepreneurs, leaders in high roles, aspiring leaders, people that are really interested in this topic. So it's exciting to have you here. You know, I mentioned your book, Global Dominance, and I'm wondering, to start out, if you could just tell us a little bit about what brought you to writing that book? What was compelling about that topic, and how did you get to that place?
Well, I've been working with companies from around the world trying to enter the U.S. market. And what I've been noticing over the years in doing this, and plus my prior background with Cisco Systems and Sun Microsystems, is that the failure rate of companies trying to enter not just the U.S. market, but any market, has been really high. And there had to be a way of simplifying the process, but also increasing the success rate for companies. And when I started doing my research, I noticed there wasn't a lot of books out on the subject and a lot of different opinions from people I talked to. So I started doing the research to the book and really put it together and finding out what made companies successful in entering new markets, what was it going to take to do that, and what could they learn from others and other failures that were going on from other companies to help increase their chances of success. And really, that's why I wrote the book. It's really a roadmap of how to enter international markets for both products and services.
Well, it's interesting, you know, as you know, because we've spoken a little bit in the past, I work a lot with new companies and early-stage companies, and I hear two different things. I hear either they're going to go global. I mean, they don't have one customer yet, you know, but they're going to go global, and no idea how to do it. Or sometimes companies that I could really imagine there being an exciting global market for aren't even considering it. You know, it's just off their radar. So I think this will be really interesting. I'd love to hear more about that and the differences of what companies can work and what can't. So let me ask you first before we get into that, what is the number one reason that companies fail when they're entering new markets? You were talking about how many fail and how many do fail and why.
Well, usually 95% of them will fail, and the primary reason, it's very
high. Huge.
And the primary reason is because they don't really do their market research. They really do not research what it's going to take to enter that market. They don't look at the channels that are available for their product in that market. They don't know the cultural differences of the market they're going after. And also a lot of them are risk. They want to avoid the risk. But the primary one is the market research. It takes some time to and effort to do that market research. It's the preparation phase that a lot of them just tend to neglect. And that's both U.S. companies and foreign companies coming into the U.S. The difference, though, between U.S. companies and foreign companies is the foreign companies that want to come into the U.S. believe they know the U.S. market. And the way they know the U.S. market, believe it or not, and this is going to sound funny, is they see American movies and TV shows, and they believe they know America, how Americans buy, how Americans will react to certain things, and they believe that they're an extension of the U.S. citizens overseas, and they really believe they know the U.S. market very well.
Oh, isn't that scary?
Yes, it is. If
yes,
I watch
Housewives is the U.S. market. Oh, that's so scary.
Can you imagine understanding the U.S. market from watching shows like Sex and the City and other different ones? You go crazy watching, trying to understand what's going on.
Sure. And the soap operas, and then all these crime dramas and CSI this and CSI that. Wow.
Amazing. Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So does a company have to go global in order to survive in today's world?
A company doesn't necessarily have to go global, but they have to think about globalization and how that's going to affect their businesses. All businesses aren't necessarily set up to go on or expand on a global basis. But when I say that, when you start a business, you should think about growing that business both locally and on an international basis. So even if you're a restaurant opening up around the corner, and this is your first one, you may want to think about what competition could come into the market from a foreign country that could affect your business. So that's globalization going on. And also, it's the world market. So companies can play in any different market and any different types of services or products. So If you start a company, especially a manufacturing-type company here in the States, you should, because your market is going to grow internationally and there's going to be demands for your product internationally. If you put it on the Internet, you're more than likely to get sales from anywhere in the world, and you have to be ready to handle the sales, the conversion of money, and also the capability of shipping that product anywhere at any time to any country.
Yeah. Yeah. So are certain industries and companies more geared to going global, more likely to be successful, or is it really pretty broad?
It's very broad, but if you really think about globalization and what's occurring worldwide right now, we're duplicating what occurred in history. When you think about people and you think about the whole topic of globalization and the world is flat or the world is round, I mean, we've been doing trade with nations for basically forever. We had the camel caravans thousands of years ago, and then we had the Venetians that were exploring the world. If you remember in your history books, Marco Polo went to China. Yeah. And then we've had the England with the Industrial Revolution, and the Dutch were probably one of the most innovative traders and scientists in the world. So we've had this history forever. So when you look at it, we have been a nation of traders, and the United States started out as a nation of traders and entrepreneurs. We were relying on England at the beginning. We built up our infrastructure. We migrated from the East Coast to the West Coast, very similar to what the Chinese are doing now and other parts of the world, the Brazilians. And what it took to build this country and the skills, the knowledge, and the entrepreneurship is now needed again for us to help others around the world develop their infrastructure and their technology. And that opens us up to new markets around the world. It also opens us up to new technologies that we can give to the world, and a great opportunity for America and American companies.
I can tell as you talk about this that you're really passionate. The energy comes up in your voice as you talk about these opportunities. And I hear you with the historical perspective. What's different today?
The differences today is, and this is why I say in the book, the world is round and it's always been round. The only difference is we still have trade. Trade's been going on, like I said, forever. The difference is the time capability of it. You can now mail a package or a product anywhere in the world in 24 hours. So where it used to take years or months to ship a product, you can do it with a matter of 2 days. Communications. Again, when you sent a message in the past, it may take whatever time it took to ship the sale to the location it was going to. Today, you can pick up a phone or even use the internet to call anywhere in the world, and it takes a second or two. So if you had a facility in Mumbai, India, you could call up and you're connected to them within a matter of seconds. And finally, the financial institutions of how to pay for the products and so forth. Again, it took letters of credit in the past. It took transportation and those areas to be able to get paid, or you had to carry cash with you. Today, you don't have to do that. We have the financial mechanisms to be able to pay for purchasing a product or expanding a product overseas within a matter of minutes. It can go electronically from one account to another. So that it's really the time frame that makes it different than in the past. It's much faster now. The world has become closer together because of it. And you can see the other party. You can use services such as Skype or Google, the video capabilities and other types of services that are out there, and you can see the person you're talking to, where in the past you weren't able to do that type of thing. So technology is really playing a major role, but it's the same type of services that we've always had throughout the centuries.
It's just accelerated many
Absolutely.
Times. Yes. What about social media? How do you see this fitting in?
Well, I see social media fitting in a totally different way to open up these boundaries that we've had in the past. You can, through using of social media, through your network of personal contacts, expand information about your product anywhere in the world at any time. So as your association of people get to know your product, they're going to tell other people about your product, and it's going to continually expand. I think there's, you know, the philosophy that there's 6 degrees of separation between everybody in the entire world. You let somebody know on services such as Link Silicon Valley or LinkedIn or even Facebook and others that are out there, they can spread that word to people they know in any country around the world and how to access the product. So let's say you came out with a new widget that's really cool and people really love it. They'll tell their friends about it anywhere in the world, and if you have the website and the capability of shipping it and handling the payment method, you can take that product and automatically have an international company within a matter of a few hours. That's the difference of what's going on
Wow.
today.
That is really amazing just to think about.
Well, you know, it's even interesting when my book was published, it went on to Amazon, and Amazon is located in multiple countries. The book went to England and to Germany, to Japan, and others. And I'm just watching how other booksellers around the world have picked up the book. So it's now available in India, and it's now available through booksellers in South Africa, booksellers in Israel. So it's just word of mouth is spread about the book, but it's also people have picked up the selling of the product through other types of distributors or distribution methods around the world. So it keeps going, and people are asking for it, and they have the ability to access it. And that's just with a book. Think about a different product that you can ship. And again, word of mouth will spread, and you'll find distributors who would want to carry it in their stores and so forth. It's just unbelievable what social media or the power of social media can do to help any type of business spread the word about the business.
Amazing. So if I were an entrepreneur, which I am, but if I were an entrepreneur that wanted to expand my business and go global, to go internationally, are there particular markets that you would suggest that I look into? And if so, why?
Well, typically American companies go into the English-speaking nations first because it's easier for them. So we don't normally think about Canada as an international market, but it truly is. So Canada is a good choice to go into. Great Britain is a good choice to go into because the people there speak English. But because of NAFTA, we have Mexico to go in. So it's just you're staying fairly local. You're staying within the language. So and the shipping is really easy to what we have right now. So that's what a lot of the entrepreneurs do. You know, it's very interesting that of all the businesses in the United States, only 1% of U.S. businesses export their products. Wow. And of those 1%, only 60% of that 1% only go to one country. So the opportunities are tremendous to be able to expand globally. So if you have a seasonal product, let's say you make beach balls or sun umbrellas, and right now in the middle of winter, you're not really selling a lot of product here in the U.S., but the market in Australia and South America, it's summer, so they could use your products over there right now. And if you're not into those markets selling your product, you're not really using the full supply chain that you have, your manufacturing facilities. You're losing a great opportunity of really bringing value to your company and revenue to your company and also to your shareholders or your family.
I would think so. And not only that you'd be mitigating some of those peaks and valleys in cash flow that are typical of many businesses, whether it's about weather, you know, and climate or demand, or whether it's about the financial situation in that particular country and how the economy is doing and whether people are going to be purchasing more of your product or service or not, that would help to even that out and make that smoother.
Absolutely. That's the nice thing about going global, because markets change based on seasons, markets change based on the taste of the individuals in those markets, but the opportunity is you get better utilization for the facilities that you have and your people if you have other markets that you can enter. Also, let's say that your product is, because of where we are in the United States right now, the market is sluggish and so forth. If one market is in that situation like we are here and it's hard to sell your products in the United States right now, other markets aren't necessarily in the same boat as we are. So a lot of the Asian markets are buying product right now. And this is what you see when you hear about U.S. companies that are doing good and they're making revenue and they're making their numbers right now is because a lot of the large multinationals are in diverse markets worldwide that are buying their product. So the same opportunity is there for smaller companies with their type of product to enter these other markets and to be able to generate revenue from those markets to hold them while the U.S. market gets back into the growing stages again.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
So obviously not all countries are the same. How would you suggest handling the challenges of working with different cultures? Talk to me about that. What are your recommendations? What do you know about that?
I think the best thing that an American company can do is, first of all, no longer be the ugly American, as we knew in the 50s and the 60s, but to understand other cultures and what other businesses and people are looking for from us, and to take the time to develop trust amongst the parties. Don't just come in like the cowboy, the U.S. cowboy, and want it to have everything your way. You really have to understand that sometimes in certain cultures it takes time to develop that trust and understanding. So it may take you longer to sell your products in those countries, but in the long run you'll benefit from that. On the other hand, you have that opportunity of again, different markets are going to be different, so a lot of them want that American spirit and that cowboy attitude for people to come in. So you'll see that a lot in Europe. So for Europe, you may want to use that forcefulness to be able to do it. In Asia, you may want to take your time, develop the trust, maintain the face of both parties as you develop it. But if you go strictly as, I'm an American and I'm an American business and I know what you guys should be doing, that's going to turn off a lot of people around the world. And all I'm saying is you need to really be sensitive to the culture, how they do business, and to develop a sense of trust. And that means communication, constant communication with them, and constant working with them so all parties really understand what's going on.
Sounds like the same kind of thing I'm talking to leaders of large organizations about is developing,
you know, what's that?
Trust, communication going in both directions, not just down, but also
right.
up. And the more challenging things are and the more change that's occurring, the more communication needs to happen because people get scared and they make up their own ideas about what's going on.
It's amazing how much alike that when you're trying to do business in America, how it applies worldwide. And if you're in the same position in China trying to do business with America, it really applies there too. Business is business in a lot of ways. So when you think about marketing, what applies to the marketing principles in the U.S. truthfully apply almost everywhere else in the world. When I was writing the book, I initially started writing the book for foreign companies to enter the U.S. market. That was the primary goal of the book, to help those companies to understand the American market. But as I started in working more with the book, 80% of the book also applies to U.S. companies that want to go overseas. Now, 20% are going to be the different laws and different tax rates and certain other things that apply in different countries. But 80% apply both ways of the material that I'm presenting. So it's very, very similar. It's the same thing. Why would you want to sell your product overseas if you're not selling it in the United States market? Well, first, the United States market may be closed to certain products, but the way you market overseas, again, is very close to the way you would market in the United States.
So I'm thinking about this. What about, this is kind of a sticky question, but what about ethical concerns? I know that what's considered normal business in some cultures is very different than what we might think of here, at least in our, you know, what we model or what we admire. How does one handle that?
The way you handle the ethical issues, you really have to look at what you want for your business and how you want to conduct your business. So if somebody, and there's also laws within the United States of how you're going to be able to conduct business worldwide. So if somebody, my suggestion from what I've discovered, if somebody wants a bribe, you bypass it. The market isn't worth it to go, or that individual isn't worth it to go that route. If you really have a good product, a good service, and it's really needed in those countries, you can be able to sell it without, you know, putting upfront money or providing bribes or anything like that. You really have to be ethical to yourself.
Yeah.
You have to, because word will spread. If you're not, your reputation was, especially with social media, will spread very fast, and it'll be a negative impression, and people won't buy you from you, or they won't buy your products. So you really have to be very careful in how you do business and the ethics that you're going to portray when you're out doing business worldwide. And again, the difference now today is things spread very fast through social media and Facebook and all these other tools, and your reputation is more at stake today than it ever has been. So I would encourage your listeners really to, if somebody offers you a bribe, walk away. If you don't feel the deal is ethical, walk away from it. On the other hand, you're going to find a lot of ethical people that want to do business with you, that are trustworthy. And I would, again, encourage people to build that trust, spend time communicating with them, learn the culture, and then you'll know how to operate and do business in that foreign country.
And don't be arrogant.
And definitely don't be the arrogant American.
You know, I'm reminded, I have a really strong background in healthcare, and one of the things I learned early on in healthcare as part of the, you know, foundational training is what they call the Platinum Rule.
Okay.
I don't know whether you're familiar with that. Of course, everybody's familiar with the Golden Rule, and most major religions have some variation of the Golden Rule, which is, you know, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. The Platinum Rule is a little different and a little better, and I think it really applies with different cultures. is do unto others as they would have you do unto them. So I think sometimes people are extremely arrogant and they say, well, I'd like that, or I think that would be great, but that doesn't matter. What matters is what's meaningful to the other person. So I think of it, for instance, if I have an employee that I want to acknowledge or celebrate an achievement, for some employees it would be great for them if I have them stand up at a big meeting and I give them a plaque, and for other employees, they'd hate that, and they'd much rather I send them a personal handwritten note that comes with perhaps a gift for their family, you know, something that comes to their home so their family can appreciate it, but doesn't give them this, you know, public. So when I think of this cultural thing, I think it's really important as you talk that people think about not what they think would be good, but what would be appreciated and valued in this culture.
And that's, again, the preparation that you have to go through to understand what it is that your future customer in that culture is going to look from you.
Yeah.
And that's really key. So it takes a lot of work. Everybody out there, even though they may be watching our television shows, are not American. Believe me.
Absolutely. So we're just about out of time. Is there one quick thing that you'd like to leave our listeners with that we didn't get to?
Well, I truly believe the opportunity is now for most businesses in America to begin to the process of thinking about exporting their product and service. In order for them to grow, in order for us to expand as a nation, we have to be able to become globalized. And that's the small to medium-sized businesses. We already have the multinationals. But for people to begin to play and to be able to expand and to increase the productivity of America, we as a nation, and again, our small business, medium-sized businesses have to be in this market. And the key to doing it successfully is preparation. And there's a lot of people out there that can help. There's a lot of services out there that can help companies begin to expand internationally. And I would encourage all your listeners and their followers through the social media to begin to think about the process and to really take action upon it for the benefit of their own company and their own company services and products.
Great. Jack, how can they reach you, find your book, if they'd like to follow up more with that?
My book is both on Amazon.com and also BarnesandNoble.com. They can find out more about the book at jackkatz.com. That's my author's website. Or if they want more information about what I do to in international business and market development, they can go to my business website, which is novusglobe.com, www.novusglobe.com. And if they want to reach me, they can do that at katz@novusglobe.com.
That's great. Thank you so much, Jack.
Oh, you're very welcome, Lisa. Thank you for having me.
So, all of you listeners, thank you for joining us tonight on the Leadership Focus, the show which gives you new ideas, interesting guests, and actionable strategies to help you be an incredible leader with a more balanced life. We hope that you've enjoyed the show, and if you have, please go to blogtalkradio.com and become a friend and make us a favorite. To sign up for our free newsletter with more tips and strategies you can use, go to focuscoaching.net on the web. Again, that's focuscoaching.net on the web. Until next time, this is your host, Lisa Pasbjork, urging you to be a better leader every day. Love.